Okay, this time we're really going to get down with Scott Roberts. We're going to take your phone calls, ghosts, demons, the tarot cards, elves, you name it. We've got it tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We've got Scott Roberts. Sometimes they call you Scotty, is it not?
That's been the, some people say that's the diminutive of my name, but I've been called that since I was a kid, and I used it when I write, so it's just stuck.
All right, Scotty, beam me up.
I have a question for you really quick. Can you indulge something for about a minute and a half here? This in my book, The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare, there's a lot of me and who I am I found in this book after I wrote it. And can I read a very short segment here that will describe very succinctly what I believe about all this fairy stuff?
Sure, very short.
The setting, this is toward the end of the book. The fairy interactions and all, and Tam and his young squire, Horatio McNutt, they're walking along the Loch Tay. And this is how it goes. You had said that you don't understand the good people, Uncle, considered McNutt. What is it that's so mysterious about them? Tam thought for a moment. They're creatures of the Almighty that do not seem to fit into this world, at least not in the way we think they should. They're here, yet apart. Tam stopped and looked out over the waters of the loch. He stooped down and scooped up a palm full of dirt and spread his fingers, letting it sift through and drop slowly back to the ground. We want everything to be as solid as the ground on which we walk. We want to be able to touch it, see it, feel it. Then and only then will we believe in it. Rather, how we tend to treat the Almighty himself, eh? Postulated McNutt in more of a statement than a direct question. Aye, smiled Tam, rather like that. We always want proof, yet for the things that are truly important, there rarely ever is. Tam let the last bit of dirt spill out of his hand, then brushed his palms together, dusting them clean. McNutt pondered for a moment, then continued, "Do you fear the good people?" "I fear what I don't understand," answered Tam. "Then to understand something," paused McNutt, "eliminates fear?" "No, not always," replied Tam, "but it does pull away the shroud of confusion. I was always taught that God is not the author of confusion, but of a sound mind. With the absence of confusion comes clarity. Clarity finds its path, and with clarity comes boldness and the washing away of fear." They walked on in silence for a while.
There's a message there, isn't there?
There is.
A deep, deep message. Good for you. Let's go to the state of Washington. Jermaine, west of the Rockies.
Hi, Jermaine.
I want to share something with you that happened to my friend a few years ago. He said before his incident, he was a non-believer. Well, someone gave him a Bible, and he would take his Bible out and read it sometimes. And then one night, said he was laying in his bed, and he heard scratching on his bedpost and knocking, and also a broom sweeping. And then he said he heard a voice telling him to kill his father. And then he got up and he was like, "Is this a close encounter of the third time?" And the voice said, "No, it's a close encounter of the first time." He started laughing at him and everything. Then he went to the bathroom, started reading the Bible, and every time he would come to Jesus or God's name, it would curse instead of saying that. And he tried to kill himself. He slit his wrist. And are you guys there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm driving truck, so it's a little bit loud. Sorry. Well, yes, he slit his wrist. And then he ended up going outside for some reason and saw this demon that had took the form of his brother. And then I asked him, was his brother alive? And he said, or dead. He said he was alive. And then he went back in his room, lay down, and then he felt hands rubbing all over his body. And he said from that incident, he got saved. You know, he believed in Jesus Christ. And he said he believes in people hearing voices, that demons are real.
Well, I think an experience like that, a lot of elements of that fall under classical demonic activity.
Why does evoking the name, Scotty, seem to work?
Well, there is, you would have to hail back again to biblical theology. And let me tell you, there was I'll relate this to very shortly to a Ouija board story that I have, an experience
I hate
from 25 years ago.
Okay.
And it's all that demons cannot acknowledge the shed blood of Christ, the lordship of Christ. They cannot acknowledge that. They will not acknowledge that. And that's, by the way, one of the tests you put them to nowadays when you are testing for the presence of demonic influence. The one Ouija board experience I had, and I haven't touched one since, lasted about 2 hours. And at the end, I asked that question, can you confess that Jesus Christ is Lord? I said, let me just ask that question. And it started spinning in a circle, and it spelled out C-A-N-T, can't. And then it went back into a figure eight, and there was a couple of other things. So what they cannot do is they cannot acknowledge that presence of God. They cannot, or they can acknowledge the presence, I'm sorry. They cannot acknowledge the lordship of Jesus or the shed blood of Christ. Now, that's from a strictly Christian theological standpoint, but that has been what I have learned in my experience.
Do you pull yourself between your spiritual beliefs and your somewhat scientific paranormal beliefs?
Oh, man, every day. I have that constant struggle between wanting to make sure that what I'm engaging in has scientific backing to it. It has something solid to stand on, and I will brush aside the spiritual sometimes to do that. But I'm finding more and more and more when I'm dealing with the spiritual, I can't brush aside the spiritual belief behind it. So I'm constantly going back and forth between the two. It's like I turn the one off to try to get a scientific answer, but then I illuminate it with the spiritual.
Okay, next up, let's go to San Pedro, California. Hello, Stephanie, you're up with us.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Scotty, how are you?
Good, is this Stephanie?
This is Stephanie.
Who is Stephanie? As opposed to Stephanie.
That, I met through doing some of the paranormal events.
All right, great. Go ahead, Stephanie.
I just want to say hello, and it's great to hear you on Coast to Coast. And I've been listening, George, for, you know, quite some time now. I was telling the guy that screened your calls, but I've been listening since I was about 16, so that's a very long time.
Well, now you're 22, so it's only been 6 years,
Yeah, I wish I was 22. Okay. anyway, the question I had for Scotty was, as far as your tarot readings go,
yeah,
what do you say to people that rely on these readings as part of their everyday life and constantly seek out psychics and seek out tarot readers to give them advice on their lives when it's actually inhibiting their life because they're relying so much on these readings?
I think those people aren't living their life. They're trying to put it down into the more mundane. It would be like having to go to your therapist every day. In a sense, not a perfect analogy, but having to go to your therapist every day to see how you're supposed to deal with daily affairs of life. It's there as a guide. Your spirit guides are there as guides to help you. And I think when you start overdoing it, and I've had people like that in my life. When I was reading cards several years ago, I'd have people that would call me sometimes every day or at least once a week and need something. And sometimes it's okay, and sometimes you can tell when they just need to stop for a while. And many times the readings that they get, it will be the same message, many times the same cards over and over and over again, like their spirit guide saying, and you know, thank God God's patient with us. But it's that, okay, here it is again. And it's almost like the message after so many times comes out saying, here it is, I'm snapping my fingers in your face. This is it. So I think people that do that are just not living life.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Steph. Appreciate you being part of the
Steph.
Program. And do you find, like I do, when you go to these various events, people are so tuned in, so intelligent about this field?
Absolutely. I find a lot of people are afraid of the tarot because they're afraid of what they're going to get. And I try to calm them right away and say, this is only good stuff this is only stuff you need to know. But on the most part, the people that go to these things are there to learn something. They're there to increase their knowledge, and that's really refreshing.
I had a brother on, not my brother, but a brother on, I don't have a brother. And he talked about how he believes ETs are demonic.
Oh, I don't think that at all. You know, I think there are some connections when you talk about the Nephilim the Watchers. You talk about Incubus, and as we talked about a little earlier, I think that there are some connectivities or there are some similarities. But I happen to believe that, this fits into all the other stuff I believe. As pragmatic a kind of guy as I am, I still believe that there are fairies, and I believe there are ghosts, and I believe there are extraterrestrial beings.
And do you think they're physical or they're dimensional?
I don't know enough about them. I certainly think they've been felt on a physical plane and on a physical level by others who are much more in the know than I. I don't think they're demonic, so I do not think they fall into that spiritual realm. You might have interdimensionality there, which could be a totally different kind of a being than we are. They may not have the same kind of physical form we have, but I believe they're as real as the bar I'm pounding on right now.
Scott, when I say Fargo, North Dakota, what do you think of?
The first thing that comes to mind is the movie.
Me too. And then we're going there right now. Hello, Joe. Go ahead.
Hey, it's Joe from Fargo, North Dakota.
Absolutely.
Hey, how you doing, Joe? Don't you know?
Good. I just wanted to tell you guys, George, I love the show, especially when you do Ghost. And Scott, you had me from the get-go when you started talking about Wisconsin and the Midwest.
There you go.
And I'll keep it. Try to keep it real short here, but I started a group back here, paranormal research and stuff, and I think the Midwest has more of a mystique to it. I have a website at planetcenterandhomeworld.com, and I hope you have the best luck on your show, but if you're in the Fargo area, if you can get in touch with us, I'd
beautiful
show you around. And
you know, you can go over to the deadreckoningtv.com site, and we've got a message board linked up there. Just come on in and say hello, and
I definitely will.
What are some of the things, Joe, you guys investigate out there?
Well, there's a lot of places you can't necessarily get permission to go in, but we check out, you know, just the old abandoned farmhouses, schoolhouses. There's websites out there about how North Dakota is shrinking with a lot of ghost towns because the kids don't want to inherit the farms. They want to, you know, they'll go to Fargo or Bismarck or go to school, and they don't want to be like their mom and dad and stuff. So a lot of towns are shrinking. There's only some towns, only 7-8 people left in them. And I just think the Midwest has always had a mystique to it, and that's why I started the website. And I just wanted to also let Scott know that if he has two questions for him, if he knew that Wisconsin, I think Wisconsin and New Jersey are considered the two most haunted states of the Union. And number two, if he's had any experience, because I'm sure there's other people out there, like you say, just watch the TV shows, who've had experience bringing things home with them after an investigation. Maybe not, because I believe in the religious aspect.
Like entities that attach themselves.
Yeah, I've had it, and it's only happened maybe for a little while, not permanently, but I've had some weird things happen after investigations, and maybe it was just nerves or something, but some stuff I can't explain. But I'll leave it at that, and just want to know, Scott, know that it's nice to hear another guy from the Midwest. It's not just the East Coast, West Coast, or Honda. The Midwest it's a very strange place sometimes. So
it is.
Well, you betcha. So I'll let you go out that way.
Yeah, you betcha.
There you go. Anyways, New Jersey, I always knew it was haunted. Scary.
Yeah, and, you know, I hadn't heard that Wisconsin and New Jersey are alike in that sense. But there are some very, obviously very haunted places here, just as everywhere else. And let me answer a couple of his questions. First of all, one thing I like about the mystique he talks about out here, when you look into the Native American sites, three of the sites that we are working on for Dead Reckoning is, well, I've talked to the Custer Battlefield. I thought that would be a very interesting
huge
place to do an overnight.
Yes, I think so.
We talked to one of the guys on our team. His dad has been a civil rights attorney for the Pine Ridge Tribal Council, the Lakota. And he is working to get us in to meet the tribal chiefs to get permission to do some sites on the reservation, like where the massacre of Wounded Knee took place in 1890. And then also Fort Robinson out there, where Crazy Horse was murdered. So there's a lot of amazing sites linked to history out there. And as far as bringing entities home, I don't know of one specifically. All I know is this, is that my house is sometimes overloaded. My wife, it usually hits her when I'm gone at an event for 3 or 4 days, and she'll call me and say, All right, I just saw a black shadow figure run up the stairs and turn out the light upstairs. My wife is not a crazy woman. She'll call me. She's watching TV, and somebody opened up the doors. There's the pocket doors upstairs, and nobody's home. And so I don't know if we brought anything home with us. If we have, that might be some of the stuff. We've had Lakota's language speak to us in this house. We had the word, get this, George, we had the word given, and two people heard it. The word was given Hoiwechi, and we had no idea what that meant. And we tried to look it up, and I was talking to a historian friend of mine. He said, oh, Hoiwechi? He says, that's Lakota for go away, get out. We got get out in Lakota.
Another thing, too, creatures attaching themselves to people.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
It does. I had that attachment of my own. I firmly believe it. Somebody who firmly believed, Adam Bly, mm-hmm. prayed for me and felt the removal of it. It was not possession. It was attachment.
Next up, let us go to Saskatchewan, Canada. Lisa on the wildcard line. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I have a couple questions.
Sure thing.
My first question is, I've had a few psychic readings done, and every single one of them have been right on, and all of them have been talking about my dreams and my goals and what I want to be, but I've never reached those goals. And would the tarot cards be able to tell me why I haven't reached those goals? Would it be different? Would the tarot card reading be different than the psychic reading? Or
I wouldn't know right off the bat. All I can tell you is this, is that the tarot, and I've said it a couple of times, it doesn't tell you what you want to know. It'll tell you what you need to hear. And I have found that many times it'll hit your goals. It'll talk about your goals, and it'll be realistic. There's a card in particular that comes to mind that says, some person was talking about their business, and it was the Three of Wands. And the Three of Wands says, it shows a guy standing at a ship harbor. And the card basically means your ship has come in, your business is going well, the project you're on, the thing you're engaged in is succeeding, but your boat's left without you, and you're stuck at the harbor waiting for the next one. All it means is, you know, your business is it's slowing down. It's not going on your time schedule. You don't fret. Don't be discouraged. Wait it out. It's still a card of success, just not on your schedule. So we'll get messages like that with the cards. I wouldn't know the specifics of how it might answer that. I've seen things like that being answered in the past, though.
Okay, any more else? Anything else, Lisa?
Yes. Would you know why the Ouija board sometimes just doesn't work with anybody, and then other times people can have a really traumatic experience with it?
Well, I think it's like ghosts. Ghosts are not there on command. When you go in and do ghost hunting, you might have somebody that had wild experiences there, and you might go in another night and get absolutely nothing. In my own house here a month ago, we had up in my daughter's room a little girl's voice say on an EVP, say, get out right now.
We'll be back in a moment, Scotty, with final calls. On our next Coast to Coast program, reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with a series of special reports, including crop circles and some very strange unidentified aerial objects. That'll be our next Coast to Coast show. We're with Scott Roberts. Scott, have you ever attended an exorcism by any chance?
I never have. And I frankly, I've heard enough stories. I don't think I'd ever want to. One of the most harrowing stories I heard was from the old assistant pastor of my old church, and he said he had assisted in an exorcism, and the very small-framed woman, there always seems to be a small-framed woman in these stories, with incredible strength, and one thing that the demons will try to do to the people who are trying to cast it out is distract them by calling out their personal and private information and their private sins, if you will. And he said it was the most embarrassing, the most frightening, terrifying experience he'd ever been through. And he said, I will never, ever do that again.
That is scary stuff.
It is stuff.
Let's go to Long Beach, California. Let's go to west of the Rockies. Hello, Seldom. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My question was, have you ever read the book Levels of Creation?
I have not.
Nor have I. What is it about?
Well, they talk about what's called the seven lower levels, which is another dimension where all, like, fairies and demons, goblins, all that lives. And the first level is where I guess you could say, all the elves and fairies live. And the lower it gets, the darker it gets. So to about the sixth level, that's where you find all the demons and creatures.
I've heard this before, Scott, these different demon levels.
I have, too. As a matter of fact, it was Adam Bly who told me some time ago, I asked him, why do some people who experience demon obsession or oppression in their homes, why do you get the growling and the scratching and the scratches on your back and things like that? And he said, just like the human caste, there is the demonic caste you have at the very bottom. He said they're almost like mindless thugs, and they're there to just wreak havoc. And the scale goes all the way up to, he says, probably the most, he says, those are probably the least fearsome, because you can get rid of them pretty quickly, he said. But the most fearsome are the intelligent ones, the ones that are there to manipulate the world, the leaders of the world, the goings on in the world. So there's a definitive caste system, and I've heard that from different points of view.
Okay, next up, let's go to Detroit, Michigan, old hometown. Hey, Ron, go ahead.
Hey, George, I want to thank you for letting me on. I want to
sure
thank Scotty on, too.
Hi, Ron.
Hey, Scotty, I got a question for you. I don't know how crazy this is, but when I was, I'm 30 years old now, and when I was younger, like maybe 12, 13 years old, a friend of my mother's was a tarot card reader. And she told me that I would be dead by the time 2012 ran around. And then I'm listening to the show, and I'm hearing about, you know, the age of Pisces going to the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
Does that have any impact on someone that's a Pisces or an Aquarius, like the change?
I am not a psychic like that woman.
Well, let me tell you first though. She ended up dying a couple years after she told me about this.
I honestly believe that you cannot predict that in somebody.
Right.
The worst I've ever gotten is that somebody is running into health issues and they might have to check something out. I've never had the tarot
let me explain this to you too, Scotty. In 2005, I had liver failure. She died from liver failure when I was like 13, 14 years old. So she died from the same thing that I ended up almost dying about 4 years ago, and I'm still here.
That's weird.
George and I have both said tonight, there's no such thing as coincidence. There's a reason that message was delivered. It's very possible that could have been something. There's no way to prove it. There's no way to know for sure, but there's a possible connection there.
But do you think, like, do you think when the change from Pisces to Aquarius, does it have anything to do with anyone that's a Pisces? Because my birthday is March 9th, 1979. I'm a Pisces.
I personally don't believe so. I believe that that's an age, that's a switch. If you can use a fanciful story, look at Lord of the Rings, the changing of an age is what he was writing about in a fantasy realm. I think that's what we're going to experience, is that changing on a much more spiritual level. I don't think all Pisces are going to, like, drop off the face of the earth in 2012.
Oh, no.
So, I honestly don't think that's connected that way.
Okay, and one more quick question. I don't know if you're into the UFO and alien thing, but what about Project Bluebeam?
I know nothing about that.
George?
Well, I don't know if that's real or not, but it's still out there.
Well, thank you. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks, Ron.
Next up, let's go to Corpus Christi. Danielle, east of the Rockies. Hi, Danielle.
Oh, actually, it's Daniel, but pretty cool.
Nice. Okay.
Daniel, how are you doing tonight? I'm just going to share a story of something that happened to me last year. I had been getting these weird feelings about 3 in the morning. I would wake up like with an empty feeling. This went on for months. And one night I woke up and I felt a presence in the room. And immediately I knew somewhere inside that it was actually Jesus himself coming down to talk to me right there in my bedroom. And I remember hearing his voice, and the feeling in the room was like love. It was all peaceful. I mean, like love that I have never felt before. And the voice was so strong, but yet so calm, and it was audible. To me, it was audible.
That's an amazing experience. And I would say when you get experiences like that, again, from a theological standpoint, test the spirits, try them, see what it is. Where is it leading you? If it's leading you to have a confidence or a faith in itself, remember that biblically speaking, it says that the devil can appear as an angel of light himself. Not to dissuade anything from your experience, just be very judgmental. Be very discerning when you see stuff like that. Don't put your faith in experiences like that easily, because you never know exactly who it is that's talking to you. It could very well have been an angelic or Jesus. I don't know if Jesus does that anymore, but it could very well have been something very, very much from God, but be very careful with those experiences.
A project for you to look into, Scott, is what the other callers just mentioned, and tell them Project Blue Beam, which is something that we've been warned about. Wernher von Braun warned us about something like this, where the so-called New World Order folks want to get together with governments and project a simulated second coming type event. And they're going to use, holographic projection, lasers, everything. They're going to make us think, here it comes. And it's not really happening. It's just an event.
Now, did they state a motive for that?
Control.
Ah.
Control. Save us, save us. And
yeah,
we'll do it. What
that.
A perfect and, time to do it, right now.
You know, and if you have eschatology play out the way, fundamentalist biblical believers believe it will be, if an event like that took place, it would be catastrophic. Who knows what's going to happen? I don't know anymore on that stuff. It's like there's points where you feel overeducated about a topic, and then you're not sure if what you've learned because of your experience really jives with what you're starting to learn outside of that box.
Good point. If you were in the Navy, you know of no Virginia. Let's go to Eric. It's your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Eric. Hey, how's it going, George?
Good.
I love the show. I've been listening for couple years now, and Scott, praise the Lord, it's good to have you on.
Well, thank you.
Now, I had a quick comment, and then I had a question. My comment was, you were talking about the Nephilim and the Ben Elohim, whatever you want to call them. It talks about them in Enoch, real briefly in Genesis, and a little bit in Jude.
Right.
And you were saying that you thought that the fairies and elves were out of that class, or at least from those events where they were fallen, and then ones that weren't really fallen that were just kind of neutral, and then basically were shunned as well. Is that what you were stating?
I'm saying that I believe that all started taking place around the same time. I don't know if I would if it sounds like I'm backtracking on that. I either misspoke or I don't believe fairies are the same thing as Nephilim. If that's what you're asking.
Well, yeah, and I'm aware that's not what I got from it either. But you were saying that's that whole class when everything kind of fell away, when people were, well, not people rather, but when these angelic divine beings basically turned their back on God's will and he shunned them.
Yeah.
Okay. And then my question was, you were talking about the tarot card thing, that you were saying that it wasn't taking the focus away from God, so therefore it was fine. Well, even if that's the case, I mean, unless the people that you're reading for actually know where that's coming from, that it is God's will or it is God's hand that's shown them that, then how, I mean, if they don't realize that, then doesn't that take away their perspective?
Well, something I always try to do in my readings is I make it very clear, and I state anybody I've ever done a reading for you before could tell you this. I will start every reading by saying, I believe that it's God, it's your angels, it's your spirit guides that are delivering these messages. And so I hail directly to that source when I do that. Now, people have a different view of God, even different views of angels. I'm not so sure and dogmatic as I used to be about God, because I think he's a lot bigger than I was taught. But I want to make sure that everybody knows when I start a reading that's where I believe the source is, and I firmly believe that.
Okay, great. Next, couple more calls to go, and that's it. Fast night tonight, Scott.
Oh, it has been.
Erie, Pennsylvania. Josh, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Josh.
Hi, George, Scotty.
Sure,
hey, Tom. I was just wondering if there's a way to figure out that a demonic being is attached to yourself.
Yes, there is. There are telltale signs. Again, I am not the go-to expert on these things. I only repeat what I've been taught and what I know. First thing I would recommend is first of all, go to Adam Bly's website and do some reading on there, first of all.
And give us that website again.
That's religiousdemonology.com. Religious demonology. Now, there are certain telltale signs to know if there is demonic influence. And from what I've learned from Adam is that demonic influence can, it usually is not the word I'm looking for. It cannot happen without invitation. Now, by invitation, God puts demons on a very short leash, and they need permission to do certain things. They can't even manifest in full form because they've had restrictions put on them. So if you are having troubles that you think are demonic, the first thing I would do, do you have a particular faith that you follow?
Non-denominational.
Non-denominational. I would seek out a spiritual leader first, somebody who knows something about demons and can give you a little more information about it without seeing you and talking to you face-to-face. Even if I were talking to you here in my own home and you mentioned this to me, I would even recommend saying, here, I need you to get in touch with this person or this person if I think it's a case like that. Because once there's a demonic attachment, they're there. If they've been invited into a house and the people that invited them to that house move out of that house can still contain those spirits, those demons.
All right. My friend actually brought this up to me a few weeks ago. Like, I've been getting injured. Like, I'm only 22. It's been, I don't know, it's going on 10 years, and it's been getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse.
What like, kind of injury? Yeah, would?
Well, it started, like, I don't know, just little things. So I had a splenectomy. I ruptured my spleen, just fluke accident. Jeez. And then just recently, I had my finger amputated. My ring got ripped off random, just caught a screw and ripped my finger off. And
had to get amputated. Ouch.
Yeah.
Well, so I would say to that stuff,
he's thinking, you know.
One thing I try not to do is I try to not over-spiritualize. While I believe the spiritual exists, I try to not over-spiritualize.
And what do you mean by over-spiritualize?
By over-spiritualizing. For me, I could say I slipped in a puddle of water in my kitchen and fell on the floor and say, oh, my God, demons are attacking me.
Oh, I see.
That's over-spiritualizing in the way I would define it. For me, I would just say I was clumsy because I slipped in the water. I think demonic influence, demonic attack, there's going to be telltale signs that's going on. You're going to have little things happening that you can define. When I gave you the story earlier, the atmosphere in my home had become so thick with tension and stress and people treating each other very badly that I earnestly believed that was beyond just us being stressed with each other. There was demonic attack. There was influence there, and we needed to do something to stop that.
Let's go to Gaston County in North Carolina. John, first-time caller. Hey, John, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to make this quick because I know time's limited. September 29th, 1991, I had received Christ in my life, and I had the same kind of experience that Thomas, the Apostle Thomas, had, where I asked Jesus to show me if he was real. I'd follow him all the days of my life. Okay, 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks after that, I'm laying in bed, and all of a sudden, this demonic presence came on top of me, just like if you were wrestling, holding somebody down on the floor where I held both my arms down and was on top of me. So I was, it's like it was this blackest, darkest figure. I couldn't really make out what it was, but it was holding me down. I tried to move my arms, and it pushed me back down. So I said, in the name of Jesus, please leave. In the name of Jesus, please leave. Nothing happened. So finally I got angry, and in the name of Jesus, I command you to leave. And when I commanded it to leave, it flew off of me, and it went into the fan on the floor, and the fan started vibrating. The next morning, my grandmother got up. She wanted to know what was wrong with the fan going out of control. The Bible teacher told me, she said, you can't ask a demon to leave. You got to command it to leave. So about a week after that, I started reading all kind of Bible verses when Jesus approached these demons and he commanded them with authority to come out. So I'm laying in bed again, and this time I'm just laying there, sitting there with the fan going and all, and all of a sudden it came on me again. So this time, to make sure that I wasn't hallucinating, and at the time I was in the gym and I was working out.
30 seconds left, by the way, Jeff.
Okay. Tried moving my hands. It pushed me back down. Well, I went to command it to leave, and when I commanded it to leave, it grabbed my mouth shut.
It did not want it to happen.
See, and I don't believe that we have power over demons. They are much stronger forces than we are. And again, in a theological framework, I believe only God has power over demons.
But we can beat them, though, can't we?
We can
with
beat
some help.
Them, but it's not by our own power.
Takes a little help, Scott.
Exactly.
Scott, thanks for being on the program.
George, thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Let us know what happens with the television show Dead Reckoning, okay?
Absolutely. Hopefully you'll see it on air, and I'll invite you and let you have a bag of popcorn.
Well, you let us know when and where, and we'll let everybody know.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate your having me on.
Okay, Scott. If you need to email me, well, of course, just make it simple. It's George at coasttocoastam.com. That'll wrap up tonight. For Jason Bowers, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.